Shack Funk. I'm Jade, and this week we got Zeno back.
Hiya.
So, how are you?
Fine. It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, and you were mentioning that nobody asked, because I recently had at least two of, I can't remember, time is weird, I can't remember when I had Chase, but I know I've had Zoan and Ruby and talked Dice Junk with them. And nobody brought it up on yours, but if you wanted to talk about it, I guess now's the time.
Yeah, I guess I don't have too much to say about Dice Junk. I will say that I'm really sad that I didn't get to play a character that I was planning on doing for Dice Junk. I remember I was, like, teasing everyone by giving them weird esoteric hints about what my character was going to be. Like,
oh,
I showed them,
so
like,
you had a different character you were going to do?
Yeah, for Season 2, yeah. It would have because it would have been, like, a different, basically a completely different setting, different continuity, different characters. So it wouldn't have been a direct continuation from Season 1.
Okay. Did Season 1 finish or end midstream? Or?
Unfortunately, well, basically Dice Junk is basically over now.
But did you get to, like, wrap up the plot?
No, it ended midstream. We didn't finish the story, unfortunately. Lots of technical issues and scheduling problems came up. So it never got a proper conclusion. We basically concluded right at the point where there was going to be a really big, like, character moment for Ruby's character, Shale, unfortunately. And I was really interested to see where things were going to go with that. But things just did not work out, unfortunately. So that just didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, you could do, like, a text online Discord server or something and just wrap up the plot that way. Posted
I guess
like
no one seems to be
fanfic.
Super interested in actually just straight up finishing or wrapping up the campaign itself, so it's basically dead at this point. So unfortunately, the podcast is more or less over. I suppose there's like maybe a small chance that we might get together and do that again, but I don't know how likely that is. I do know that me and Chase and Tony ended up starting a new server while we're doing a play-by-post campaign called Sigil Knights, which takes place in Sigil, which is, I guess, a setting in the Outlands, which is, I guess, like a planescape thing. I'm not intimately familiar with all the lore. But the setting seems really interesting. It actually kind of reminds me a little bit of the Citadel from Mass Effect.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of similar to that. But anyway, getting back to Dice Junk, though, yeah, it's, it looks like it's more or less over. We weren't able to complete the story, unfortunately. And I did have some interesting plans for my Season 2 character. I remember I was kind of borrowing a bit from Aztec mythology, for, like, the deity that I worshipped, and there's going to be, like, an acolyte, and I also say one little detail is that I was going to make him, like, a Storm Herald Barbarian, because I really love the mechanics and the flavor of that subclass.
Is that one of the new Xenophobes, or...
I believe so. It was introduced in Unearth Arcana, and they, like, basically made it official through Xanathar's Guide.
Yeah, I've kind of glanced at those, I haven't actually read them in detail.
Yeah, I don't know what changed exactly, because I do not have Xanathar's Guide. I know it's in it. I imagine they probably tweaked some things to balance it out.
Okay, so yeah, you're going to go with the unbalanced version.
Yes, because the unbalanced version is way more fun. So I remember, like, teasing people. I found, like, just random videos of, like, lightning strikes to try to communicate that I was, like, a storm herald, and I could basically zap people with lightning, because that's what you do if you're a storm. If you're attuned to the sea, specifically. So, yeah, it was really sad that I didn't get a chance to roleplay that character, but I have them in an unused character folder whenever I come up with weird ideas. So I'll keep them there, and maybe one day I'll finally be able to use him for something.
Yeah, I was just looking at the questions real quick to say, because I mentioned that I finished playing Kirby Star Allies, and okay, there are Kirby-based questions, but nobody actually asks my thoughts on the game, so I guess, yeah, thoughts on the game. It's good, but it feels kind of bare bones for a platformer, especially considering, like, I'm at the same time as I was playing this, I'm also playing Yoshi's Woolly World on 3DS, which it plays like a classic Yoshi's Island platformer, and so it's like the game encourages you to explore, like, every corner. Like, if you can see a platform, you're probably going to want to go there, because there's going to be, like, an invisible collectible that you can You jump through it, and now it appears, and then you hit it with a yarn ball, and you can get it. Whereas Kirby Star Allies has... There's one hidden puzzle piece in every level, and everything else is just like a straight platformer. So you can go digging around the corners, but you're not really going to find... There's not a lot of stuff to find, and there's not really a lot of levels for that matter. Like, Kirby games typically have between 6 to 8 worlds worth of levels, and this one's only got 4. Like, the main focus of the game is really... It feels like the new Super Mario Brothers games, where it's like... They put more emphasis on 4-player cooperative multiplayer than on actually putting a lot of stuff to do in the levels. And I haven't tried multiplayer. I would have to have friends for that, but... they do make it so you can get computer players who thankfully actually aren't as stupid as computer players tend to be. You know, they don't run off cliffs or get themselves killed quite as much as AI co-op buddies usually do. So that was nice, I guess. I'm a little disappointed that the game doesn't have more to it. Still looking forward to the DLC, I guess, because at least, you know, they're bringing back some other, like, characters from previous games as... They're like teammates, but you can unlock a mode after you beat the game where you can play as those characters through, like, a speedrun version of the game. So, yeah, so I guess, yeah, that's basic thoughts on it. Like, it's good, but it could have been better. It's not as good as the Kirby games on 3DS were.
Okay, interesting. I haven't played a Kirby game since 64, and I think that's the only one I've ever played.
Yeah, and the 64 one's good. The new ones tend to, I think, draw the most from Superstar on Super Nintendo, which was also a really good... Like, that's the one where they had... Like, you get a power, but it will have... Like in Kirby's Adventure, they introduced copy abilities, and you're like, you eat a sword guy, and you get a sword hat, and you can swing a sword. Superstar made it so you eat the sword guy, you get the sword hat, and then... You can, like, do multiple types of attacks with it. So, like, you get, like, a bigger range of stuff you can do with the moves that you get. And the newer Kirby games have all been, like, copying off of that for, like, inspiration and style. So, yeah, so I guess questions. We got one on Twitter, and it looks like a quick one, so we'll do that one first. Omnilord Integrated, sometimes known as Brain Octopus Solutions, asks, what are the things he, meaning you, likes about dragons?
I admittedly have very shallow reasons for doing so. It's just purely aesthetic. I just find them to be very aesthetically pleasing. They're just really cool and badass to me. I love just Googling cool fan art that people make depicting dragons and various different actions and whatnot. I've always been really taken by their iconography and imagery, even though I don't really know a lot about or read a lot or engage with a lot of media that actually has dragons in them, like actual stories about them. There's some stuff that I've been kind of intrigued by that I'd like to check out at some point, but I haven't had a chance to look at it. Like, I remember I fell down a weird rabbit hole in Google and found out about something called, I think it's called the Dragon Calling series, which I guess is like this children's fantasy series about a dude named, like, Dreon, who's like the last known dragon, and he's trying to find his people, which seems kind of interesting. Yeah, so I kind of want to check that series out. And certainly, if anyone has recommendations for, like, stories about dragons, like, I was looking into, like, cool fiction that has dragons in it, because I would like to read more dragons. But, for the sake of answering his question, though, it's purely just my interest in that aesthetic, and I find them to be really aesthetically pleasing, and I know some, like, mythology stuff that tends to be kind of neat. Like, I was just recently building a new D&D character just for the hell of it, based off of that werewolven character from Season 2, whose name escapes me.
Yeah, was that Jem?
Oh, yeah, it was Jem. Yeah, she was Vinny's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, Jim, I just like the idea of a werewolf character seemed really fun, so I made one of my own, and I decided to, like, kind of incorporate the story of Bakunawa, who's, like, this legendary, like, Filipino dragon, and he's associated with eclipses, that, like, the legend is, like, Bakunawa was banished away from our realm of existence, and so whenever there's eclipse happening, it's him trying to return to our world. So, unfortunately, his wiki page was very sparse, but some of the stories seem kind of interesting, and I kind of rubriced it in a way that would make sense for the character that I was trying to go for.
Yeah, I was trying to think of dragon stories. Like, the only ones that are coming to mind right now are the How to Train Your Dragon movies, and I haven't read or watched it, but Aragorn, I don't know if it's good or not. I've heard mixed things, but
I know Aragorn was a pretty popular book series. I heard the movies weren't very good.
Yeah.
But I know the books were very popular. I never got a chance to read them. I might check them out one of these days. Trying to think. I never saw How to Train Your Dragon, but I know a lot of people like the first movie.
Yeah.
So I should probably watch that at some point.
Yeah, and I thought the second one was good, too. It's at its core, it's like child's first pet story, but that pet is a dragon.
Right.
Whereas, so I guess, like people who have, like if you've raised a dog or a cat, you can relate with this idea of a kid trying to, like, house train his dragon, I guess. Not exactly house train, I don't think he really takes it indoors, but just train the dragon.
I don't think it can fit indoors, it's pretty big from what I remember.
Yeah. I was thinking dragon, do you prefer eastern or western dragons?
I don't have a strong preference for either. They're both kind of cool aesthetically in their own way, it's hard to really say. I don't think I have a strong preference for either. I think I'm a little more familiar with western stuff than eastern stuff, but I think just on pure design and aesthetic, I think they're both pretty cool.
Okay, let's see. Okay, I've got the questions on the forum. Okay, so from Eugene, if Link is a professional lawnmower, then who's Kirby? Or alternate titles for other VG characters. So I guess starting with Kirby, Kirby is a professional vacuum/garbage disposal. Also maybe a body snatcher. He eats people and becomes them. Like
jobs or professions that they take.
I mean, Link being a lawnmower is like the snarky take on Link and how much you cut grass in those Zelda games.
Oh, is that a thing you do? I did not know. I was confused about what that meant.
Yeah,
I mean,
at least in like the Link to the Past on Super Nintendo and somewhat in like the N64 games, but especially Link to the Past, you have like these big fields of grass and they hide rupees and items in them, so you spend a lot of time just cutting grass to get things that you need, like hearts and money. Jokingly, he's a professional lawnmower, so Kirby, because he's constantly sucking things up, is a vacuum cleaner or a garbage disposal, or I mean, I guess because he becomes the things he eats, he's more like a body snatcher, I guess.
Okay. Does that make Mario a professional stamp? Because he stamps things, I guess?
Yeah, and he's always jumping. It's just running and jumping, like running through obstacle courses constantly, and somehow saves a princess at the end of that. But yeah, no, he does have a thing for jumping on people. Okay, what if Kirby eats intern Craig? Then he's going to have a life of despair.
But who's intern Craig? Is it Stuttering Craig from Sword Attack? Because that
no,
would be
it,
interesting.
Yeah, no, it's from Fist Shark Marketing Podcast.
That's
yeah, they have an intern named Craig, and they're constantly making him do just horrible things, like embarrassing things, and painful things because he's the intern and they can do that to him.
That sounds sad. I feel bad for Craig. Also, I wonder what happened to Stuttering Craig. I haven't heard from him in a long time.
It's off stuttering in the wilderness somewhere. When you hear a stutter echoing on the wind at night, you know that Stuttering Craig is out there. Or something like that. Okay, Revan asks, favorite alliance?
Literally the only thing I could think of was the military alliance from, Earth's military alliance from Mass Effect. I don't even know if that's my favorite alliance. It was the only thing that I could think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, first one's coming to mind is, the Alliance to Restore the Republic, better known as the Rebel Alliance from Star Wars. There's Marvel Ultimate Alliance. They had a couple video games. I don't think I actually played them, though. Like, they look cool, because they got all the Marvel characters on the front, but I don't think I played them.
I guess Avengers counts, because they are an alliance of people doing good things, I guess.
Yeah, if we just expand alliance to mean, like, team, then favorite team.
I also say Teen Titans, but specifically the Teen Titans from the Cartoon Network animated series, which apparently I think is getting a sequel, if I were.
Yeah, I heard that, because, like, they've had Teen Titans Go for a long time now, which, it always seems weird to me, because it's like so many of the jokes draw from the 2003 cartoon, but they don't air the 2003 cartoon on Cartoon Network, last I checked. So I don't know how people are supposed to get the jokes.
Yeah, it's so bizarre and weird. God, I could rant forever, but I hate that show.
Yeah, well, so, and that show's getting a movie, too. Like this summer, Teen Titans Go to the Movies or something. Starring Nicolas Cage as Superman. Finally. Got his dream. Yeah, no, I'm not planning to watch that one. Actually, that reminds me, there's news coming out now about Sony's Venom movie. And it sounds like, I don't know if they just don't have the budget or they don't know why people want to see a Venom movie, but it sounds like it's going to be mostly Tom Hardy until the last bat. Like, Tom Hardy and the Venom suit will manifest as just, like, dark tentacles coming out of his hands and, like, forming into a shield and stuff. But you don't really actually see the Venom that people want to see until the final battle for, like, 2 minutes.
That seems odd. Also, do people want a Venom movie? Venom never seemed interesting enough to be, like, his own character in his own movie. I only really understand him as an antagonist to Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, he had, like, a hero, anti-hero solo series in the 90s, and he kind of fits with the 90s edgy aesthetic. And, like, I think it could work if they'd want it. They would definitely need, you gotta have him in the suit. Like, his character is okay, but, like, the suit is what sells it for being cool. So if they don't have the suit, then it's bland. I mean, it's like Spawn. Spawn, he's got a pretty good story, but you gotta have that badass suit if you really want people to like it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's iconic, but I don't know. I mean, I've not read that original 90s comic, but 90s edgelord crap does not inspire in confidence in me.
Yeah, I mean, I went back and read one of them recently. It was one that inspired a Spider-Man Venom beat-em-up game on a Super Nintendo. I used to have the game. I never knew what the story was, and then I looked it up and I bought the graphic novel. And, like, it was okay. It does feel really weird now reading that anti-hero stuff, and it's like, hey, we got a hero, and he kills bad guys, and he's, like, protecting the innocent. And I don't know, like, the whole murderous hero thing definitely feels kind of creepy now. I mean, it makes you appreciate the stories that were critical of that more. Like, Kingdom Come is a really good story on that topic. But, yeah, that's a whole story in itself, explaining that comic. Okay, you know, favorite alliance. I mean, yeah, the Avengers is a pretty good one for that. Okay, Revan's second question. Should toys rather be decorative or played with?
Okay, I have weird, complicated feelings on this, surprisingly. Because as a kid, I was very much like, no, toys should be played with, like collectibles. But as an adult, I've gotten less interested in really playing with stuff, and I don't really buy collectibles or anything like that just because I don't have the expendable income or really the space for that stuff, but I can sort of and become more sympathetic to the idea of, like, I just want, like, this cool model put on my desk, and it's just something pretty cool to look at to cheer up my mood while I'm working and just kind of have it on my desk. To kind of decorate it and have a cool aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I usually do take toys out of the box. I have bought some that I keep in the box, mostly because I don't want to get dust on them. And lately I've gotten into getting display cases for things, so it's like I can display it and keep it dust-free, but also, you know, I actually get to interact with it if I want. Like, I can take it out of the case. But yeah, no. I mean, as I've gotten older, I don't have, like, the time or energy or imagination, I guess, for playing that I used to. And I just, like, appreciate the artistry of, you know, like Lego figures. I've got a few cases of those, and it's just nice to see, like, the design work that went into, like, simplifying this character's look so they can print it on these blocks, and, yeah, there's just so many, like, really good, like, minimalist kind of designs to how they represent these characters. And then just, like, you know, statue figures in general. Just, like, having them, putting them in a cool pose, and then displaying them as, like a little statuette or an art piece. It's kind of funny how, you know, like, you can get, you know, like, a statue with no joints, it doesn't move, and it will cost more money than, like, a detailed, articulated, doll action figure, which, you know, looks just as good on display.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. I think it varies on whether I prefer it to be decorative or played with. Although, even played with, I tend now to prefer, like, light play, so you're not actually damaging the thing. You know, not throwing it against walls or anything, like younger me would have done.
Yeah, I definitely did that, too. I remember I had, like, these old Transformer toys, and I, like, took them apart with, like, a screwdriver, just out of curiosity, and then just reassembled it, because why not?
Mm. Yeah, I remember in kindergarten having a toy of Scorpion from Spider-Man, and we were playing some kind of game where we were, like, throwing our toys up in the air to see how high we could throw them, and he ended up flying over a fence, and then when we found him, like, his arm had popped off and flown across the parking lot. And his arm is still detached. I still have him, but his arm is detached, and his paint's pretty scratched up.
Okay. I remember, let me think, I'm trying to think of other things I did with my toys, but I think I had, like, a Power Rangers action figure that I, like, I looked towards a candle to see what would happen, and then he, like, started melting, and then he caught on fire, so I got scared. So I ran to the bathroom and threw him in the toilet and flushed him.
Yeah.
I don't really understand what, like, my train of thought was on that or what I expected would happen, but, you know.
Did it end up actually going through the pipes, or was it too heavy?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did.
Mm.
I don't think the toilet didn't get clogged up, from what I remember, so he's now somewhere in a New York City sewer, I guess.
Yeah, he's off fighting the putties.
He was the Green Ranger specifically, too, in case anyone was wondering. I think it was like the original Power Rangers line, too.
Yeah, the best one. Okay, let's see. Third question. Do you prefer to have overall good results or mostly meh but with a stroke of genius?
I would say the former, because I value consistency more than anything else. Like, I think that's, like, being good and competent and doing that consistently seems more valuable to me than being incompetent at whatever it is you're attempting to do and then occasionally having a moment of brilliance.
Definitely. I think I'd agree with that. I'd rather something just be, like, good enough, or, like, seem mostly, like, those moments of genius, I guess, can be nice, but if you have to get through, like, I'm picturing, like, if you write a really crappy novel, but it has just, like, one character moment that is brilliant, I'm not sure that makes the rest of the novel really worth reading through just to get to that one, like, really brilliant scene or moment in it.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's plenty of media that I can think of that maybe, like, starts off kind of interesting and then completely peters out and gets super boring after a while. Or, like, there's tons of stuff I can think of that's, like, there's some interesting ideas here, but it's just too inconsistent and poorly structured and just has a lot of technical problems that prevent it from really being good. And honestly, those are the things that are the most frustrating, at least for me, is watching something feel like there's so much potential to be really good and it's completely squandered.
Yeah, and like I guess, okay, movie example, like the overall good results, I could see that being like the Marvel Studios movies. That it's like they're rarely brilliant, but they're usually, you know, good and enjoyable enough that I can just keep watching them and not want to not watch them because they're good. It's like I go in expecting this will be good enough that I will enjoy it. Yeah, I was trying to think if there was like a DC. Yeah, I was trying to think if there's like a DC movie that I could use as an example of bad but with a stroke of genius. I don't remember if Suicide Squad or Batman v Superman had any strokes of genius.
I don't personally feel that way. I think the big problem with like any of the Snyder stuff is that he's playing with some kind of complicated, interesting ideas, but is just so incompetent as a storyteller.
Yeah, no, he's generally more interested in like cool visuals and stuff that sounds smart but may not actually be thought all the way through.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There was a really great tweet by Dan Olson that something went really wrong. I'm trying to find it. Oh, there we go. I found the tweet. This is a really good tweet. I'm just going to read this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, like, to me, the best take on Zack Snyder's... It's become sort of accepted in session that Zack Snyder's a talented visual storyteller. Even I've repeated that, but he's actually not. He's actually a Todd McFarlane visual storyteller. McFarlane is undeniably a talented artist, but has a visual... As a visual storyteller, he gets bored and sloppy in the in-between stuff, so he skips that stuff so he can get to the big moments, to the cool full-page spreads, the money shots, and the needle drops.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not as much about the storytelling as it is the artistic visuals.
Yeah, and then even then, it's like, your statistic visuals are kind of neat, but then it's like, it's not supported by anything substantive or meaningful enough to really, like, make much of an impact anyway, because he's skipping over all the important details that really make people feel invested or interested in that.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a cool poster designer. I mean, I will admit, like his Watchmen movie, the movie isn't good, but I really like the trailer. Like, just the way the trailer sums up and presents the images and the ideas and stuff is really cool and impactful in ways that the full movie isn't.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that movie, but I always remember being really intrigued by the trailers. One of these days, I should probably attempt to watch it.
I mean, definitely read the comic first. The comic is the best version of it.
I don't know. I'm not super big on Alan Moore stuff.
Let's see. Okay, number four. If you could make one fictional band real, which would you choose?
This is another tough one because I was trying to think of, like, media that I've watched that has fictional bands in them, but I can't think of anything, really.
Yeah, I was trying... I probably should have Googled some, because the only one coming to mind is Josie and the Pussycats. And that's like an old Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Didn't they have, like, a shark in their band or something weird like that?
There was another one. Hanna-Barbera had a thing for, like, bands that also solve mysteries or something. Like Scooby-Doo, but their gimmick is that they're a band. So they had Josie and the Pussycats, and they had another one where I don't remember any of their names, but they had a shark.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the other one was. I remember the shark one. I don't remember the Pussycats one.
Yeah.
It was... Oh, wait, was it like Jason and the Argonauts?
There's another one like that. I don't think they were a band, but I know there was one where... If it's the one I'm thinking of, it was like prehistoric... fantasy kind of, and they have like these two blobs that are like their cute animal type sidekick, because they always have one of those.
Hold on, I've almost found it. It was Jabberjaw. That's what it was. It was okay.
Oh yeah, I think I was thinking of the Herculoids.
Yeah, okay, so Jabberjaw was the one I was thinking of. It was Jabberjaw who had a band, and I think he...
So if we made that band real, then you would have a real talking shark. That could be neat. And terrifying, but got a real land shark now.
It was Jabberjaw and the Neptunes. That was the name of the band. Okay. But anyway, the answer I was going to go with would be there's an anime I'm currently watching called My Hero Academia. It's a great series that I would recommend everyone watch. The manga is currently in an arc where they're hosting like a school festival. So now a bunch of characters are, like, forming a band for the festival, which seems kind of neat.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, there's got to be anime about bands.
I know there's a lot of, like, there's specifically, like, Japanese, like, pop idol stuff. But most of the music doesn't really interest me and doesn't do a lot for me, so I don't really watch that stuff. It doesn't really I'm not really into like the Japanese idol scene. So, but there's tons of like idol stuff, and oh, actually, you know what? I just remembered. They have Beck Mongolian Chop Squad. That's a really good series about a boy coming of age story, joins a band, and they go to America and they rock and roll. It's very good.
Actually, that one's. I'm looking up the exact name of these guys. Figurin Dan and the Modal Nodes, who are the Cantina Band from Star Wars. The do 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 do. We'll make those guys real, so they can freak everyone out with their crazy-looking faces.
Do they only do that one song? Is that just.
In the movie, we only. Well, no, actually, there is another song that they play. Like similar sounding, it might be part of the same tune, but that's the one everybody knows them for. It's like that main one.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure they're. I was gonna say, okay, their instrument is called a clue horn, KLOO. Also, their music is called jizz. That's a fun sound
Yeah, I
effect.
don't understand who thought that was a good idea to call it jizz.
Yeah, they're playing jizz. In your ears.
That's not where that's supposed to go.
Ear sex. So, fifth
Okay.
question. What would you preserve for people to have after an apocalypse?
The corny answer is hope. My
How do you preserve
logistics
hope?
answer, I have no idea. I'm just that was the only thing I could think of. That was the first thing that came to mind. Is just I don't
Yeah,
know, trying to find meaning in your life.
that's the kind of answer they give you in a movie.
Well, yeah. But my logistic answer, my like metagamey answer, would be potable water, because I figured like at least in most of the apocalypse media, most of the media that I have. Post-apocalypse stuff that I've seen, usually potable water is very difficult to come by. So, if you have lead, I imagine it makes surviving a little easier.
Yeah, I wasn't actually thinking of things that would be helpful for people to have in an apocalypse. I was just gonna give a dumb answer, like, we'll preserve this specific episode of Shack Funk for them to listen to. None of the others, so they don't have any context for it. It's just this one episode is there. And they'll just ask why. Why would you do this, Jade? Or maybe it'll become a holy text, who knows? If this does become a holy text, we should lay down some commandments. Be cool to each other.
Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood is a bad anime. That's my commandment.
And I'll ask, what's that? Oh, that must be the evil one.
Yes.
And then eventually you'll get like a counterculture that forms around brotherhoodism of wanting to worship the antithesis of this religion.
I would patiently await this great future.
Yeah, because I guess we're assuming that all other media has been lost in the apocalypse, and all anybody has is this one episode of a podcast. Okay, so then get to Shirokuro's questions. What's the next film you want to see in theaters?
I guess any of the Marvel stuff, like Infinity War, looks fun. I saw the trailer for that recently when I was in theaters a couple of months ago. I was like, the Marvel stuff's all right. It's well, it's like popcorn filler, whatever. And then I saw that trailer. I'm like, oh, I'm hyped. I
Did you
want to
see the
see
new
this shit.
trailer or the first trailer?
I don't know which trailer it was. I'm not good at keeping up with trailers,
Did it
dude.
show
I just saw.
Thanos with his glove punching Captain America and Captain America catching the glove in his hands?
I don't think I saw that one. I
Okay.
remember him having the glove, and then he was fighting Tony Stark in
Yeah, and
this
they show him
weird
like
armor.
putting one stone in the glove and talking about how ruling the world or something.
Yeah, his big is the big. His dick is the biggest dick that there ever was. His dick is the dick that I refuse to have him.
Because there's a new trailer that shows even more stuff. Like, we get to see, like, there's gonna be flashbacks of him and young Gamora, which led to, I think it was the directors of the movie, they posted a spoof trailer based on that one of Logan, where, like, they show his clawed hand, like, hanging down and the little girl's hand reaching up to hold it. They show Thanos' hand hanging down and Gamora's green hand holding it.
That would almost be sweet if he wasn't a horrible monster.
Yeah, no, it is kind of creepy.
I really want to see how, like, Guardians of the Galaxy mixes in with all the other stuff, just because, like, they're so goofy and irreverent and everyone else is so serious.
Mm. I mean, you see a little bit of that in the new trailer.
What was that?
In the new trailer, you see a little bit where this, like, Star-Lord and Iron Man and Drax are, like, standing around planning something. And Star-Lord says, I like your plan, it's really good, but it has one problem, and that's that it sucks. So, let's leave the planning to me.
That sounds great. The one I saw was just, it was Thor was in the ship with them, and he's like, who are you people? And then they just turn
around. Oh, yeah, and they're just waving.
Camera shot of all them.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing they must have been the first one or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The end of the first one, they revealed that, yes, the Guardians of the Galaxy will be in this movie.
Yeah, so I don't know. I can't wait to see them being goofy and weird.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And it seems like, I guess, it sounds like Thor is going to have to go off and get a new weapon because he got his hammer all busted in the last one.
I don't know. The whole point was that, like, it was just a focus for his powers. I thought the point was that he doesn't need that anymore.
Yeah, but he is going to have an axe, like the toys revealed. He's got some kind of axe, and the handle, it's like a wooden handle that people are thinking might be like a piece of Groot. Like, Groot, because Groot and Rocket are going to help him find it, at least based on what the Lego set shows. Those two team up with Thor to go to some forge or something and make a new weapon for him. We still don't know what the Soul Stone is or where it is. I guess it's really powerful, but they haven't revealed who has it or, you know, what. So, it's kind of surprising that they managed to keep that under wraps for so long.
Yeah, I'm really confused, because, like, which stones have we even seen? I think we've only seen one or two at this point.
We've seen five of the six.
Have we? I guess I must have completely missed that or something.
Yeah, no, yeah, the blue one is... Yeah, blue is the Space Stone, which was the Tesseract in the Avengers.
Okay, I remember that one.
Yep. The Mind Stone is yellow. It was inside of Loki's scepter, and in Age of Ultron, they took it out of that and used it to make Vision.
Okay, yeah, okay, so I remember that.
The red one is the Aether. It's the Reality Stone. It was in Thor the Dark World, and at the end of the movie, they boxed it up and gave it to the Collector.
Yeah, I just saw Thor the Dark World, but I don't remember that part specifically, but okay.
Yeah, yeah, it was like a red liquid, but then it forms into a stone.
Okay.
Let's see, the purple one is the Power Stone. The Guardians of the Galaxy were on... It was inside of the orb in that first movie, and...
Yeah, they got that one.
Yeah, and they stuck it in the treasure vault at Xandar, which is where Thanos is going to go steal it from.
Okay, so I know that much.
And then the Time Stone is the green one, and it's inside of the Eye of Agamotto that Doctor Strange wears around his neck.
Oh.
So that just leaves the Soul Stone, which is the orange one. There's been speculation that it's like Heimdall has it, because his eyes glow orange and he can like see people anywhere. But if they were going to confirm that, they probably would have done that in Thor Ragnarok. So then there's speculation that it's inside of the meteor that crashed in Wakanda. And that's possible, but there hasn't been any... Like all that stuff glowed purple. It didn't glow orange, so it doesn't seem like it, but maybe? I mean, I guess it would explain how they can, like, walk into the spirit world the way they did when they, like, eat that herb thing.
Maybe. I don't know. Do we know the story behind why he's collecting that? Like, what the original comics were like? Because I was listening to a Linkara review, and apparently in one version of the story, he's just doing this because he's trying to impress the goddess of death.
Yeah.
So I'm really amused by the idea that he's just doing this just so he can get laid.
Yeah, if they're going to have Death Incarnate, they haven't shown her yet. I was thinking they were going to make Hela from Thor Ragnarok be Death, but then they killed her, so...
I mean, I'd do anything for Hela, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
they set her up as the goddess of death, so it's like, okay, so this is the new version of death, right? And then she dies.
More like the goddess of my heart.
Mm. Yeah, but now in the new trailer, they say that he wants to get all the stones so he can wipe out half of all the living people in the universe.
Only half?
Yeah, like he says half? Specifically half. And in the comics, it was half because he was trying to impress Death. And he didn't want to wipe everyone out, but Death was upset that so many people had been coming back from the dead because of comic book bullshit. That Thanos is like, hey, I'll fix this for you. I'm going to wipe out half of everyone in existence, and now everything's balanced again. In the movie, they haven't shown Death at all, and it's sounding like it's going to be more of a philosophical thing, where it's like, I don't know, maybe he's like the Reapers in Mass Effect, and he thinks the universe is getting overpopulated, and he wants to cut it back by just killing half of everyone.
Have they revealed anything about his motives? I would assume it was just generic, I want more power to rule everything.
No, I mean, he says in the trailer he specifically is going to wipe out half of everyone, and, you know, like, he's talking to the Avengers, and he says, hey, when this is all over, half of you will still be alive. Take comfort in that. And, yeah, the other stuff, I guess, like, the directors have kind of talked around it, but they haven't said specifically they're saving it for the movie, I guess.
Okay.
But the movie will, from the sound of it, like, Thanos is going to get the most screen time, so we're actually going to, like, find out his backstory and stuff. And then Thor, of the Avengers characters, is getting, like, the second most screen time. So...
Who's getting the most screen time again? I'm sorry.
Thanos, you know, the villain, is getting the most. Right. And then Thor, of the Avengers characters, is getting the most, like, second most screen time.
Okay, that's interesting. They're focusing on Thor.
Yeah. I mean, I guess partly because he's getting his new weapon, partly, I don't know, maybe he's going to be connected to the Soul Stone or something. Which reminds me, this also, it's a very loose speculation, but they've been releasing merchandise where they have, like, a set of six custom-printed glass cups that show the six stones with characters associated with them. And on multiple occasions, they've shown, like, Iron Man and War Machine being in, like, the same image as the Soul Stone. And it's not clear if they're doing that because there isn't a stone they can associate them with, or if they're doing that because somehow that new element that Tony created is actually connected to the Soul Stone. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out in, like, a few months, I think. It's coming out, like, a month or two.
Yeah, April 27th.
Noise.
Yep. Yep, it got pushed up from May because they wanted a global release, and because they don't want to compete with Deadpool and the Han Solo movie in May.
Alrighty then.
Yeah, so yeah, Avengers is the next movie I'm planning to see in theaters. I'm not aware of anything else in March or April that I want to see, aside from that.
Yeah, nothing really comes to mind for me.
Okay, let's see. Jade, now that you've gone through Kirby Star Allies, what game do you want / intend to play next? I'm actually not aware of... I don't know what the next game coming out is. Like, I'm at 98% complete on Kirby Star Allies. I just have to beat the hardest mode of the boss rush, and then that game will be 100% done. I picked up a guidebook for Mario Odyssey so I can get the last of the moons that I haven't found yet. So I'm going through that. I just finished the main mission on the new Assassin's Creed Origins DLC. So now I just need to go through and play the other missions. But for new games, like, Metroid Prime 4 is supposed to come out this year, and I'm definitely getting that. If Smash Brothers actually does come out this year, I'll be getting that, but I don't expect it until at least the end of the year. Yeah, that's about it, I think. I don't know, did you have any games you're planning to get coming out?
Not really. I did want to talk a bit about Final Fantasy VI because I've been replaying it, but before I get into that, I will say I've not bought any new games in a while. I have a couple of games that I still haven't finished yet, that I haven't even started yet, or started and played through a good chunk and just haven't gotten around finishing yet. So I really want to sit down and actually finish all my stuff before I buy any new stuff.
Mm.
I was kind of interested in Monster Hunter Worlds. I might pick that up. We'll see what happens. I've always been curious about Monster Hunter. It seems kind of fun, but I don't know.
Yeah, I've played the demo of one of the 3DS ones, and I couldn't really get into it. I think it just seems too complicated for me with all the, like, the little things they expect you to keep track of when, like the main game seems straightforward enough. You equip yourself and you go out and you hunt these monsters, but you have to do, like, a lot of planning to, like, I guess, I don't know, study their behaviors and stuff, and, like, find the best way to attack them and the best weapons to attack them with, and like, there's a lot of depth in there that I tend to just play, like platformers, you know, you run, you jump on things, and, yeah. More straightforward games.
Okay. Well, depth and complexity is definitely up my alley, so,
yeah. I don't know, we'll see. Yeah, it's like an action game, but with the depth of an RPG.
Right. But that being said, though, I have been playing Final Fantasy VI a lot. I've been revisiting it. This is probably the third time I've played it, probably to completion, more or less. But, yeah, I think, depending on my mood, this is probably my favorite Final Fantasy. I kind of waver in between 6 and 7, but I think 6 is probably the best, because I think 6 has a great story, but also really fun and interesting mechanics and a lot of depth to it. But definitely revisiting it now, I'm just really impressed by narratively how ambitious it is. Because one thing I've been thinking about a lot is that the Final Fantasy series has never really shied away from, like, player character depth. Like, we've had, you know, like, even as back as Final Fantasy II, you had, like, Joseph, who has a very tragic death. And then Tella in Final Fantasy IV, and then Galuf in Final Fantasy V. So, like, Final Fantasy was killing off characters long before Aerith's infamous death in Final Fantasy VII. Though I guess that's probably the most memorable and iconic one that people tend to think of. And I like those moments because, you know, those moments kind of force players to question and examine the cost of their heroic journeys and the bravery and self-sacrifice that is required to confront evil. But what I really found intriguing about Final Fantasy VI upon revisiting it is that Final Fantasy VI very explicitly is very existentialist and is very explicitly about, like, life and death and finding meaning in your life and confronting really difficult and uncomfortable questions about, like, I don't know, what's the nature of life? Is there an afterlife? You know, how fragile are we in, like, the face of overwhelming circumstances? To briefly go back to Final Fantasy VII, I know there's a really great quote by a character named Cid. There's, like, a plot point that I can't remember if this was, like, a side quest or not. This might have been just a side quest, but there's definitely a moment where Cid's whole thing was that he was, like, basically an astronaut and trying to launch a rocket into space, but then when he tried to do it, something went wrong and it didn't work. But basically, he gets a chance to redeem himself and he actually takes off into space. And while he's in the space, there's, like, a really great quote where he kind of struggles with what's called the overview effect, which is a common, like, psychological phenomenon that a lot of actual real-life astronauts have gone through. But, like, Cid says, "I always thought this planet was so huge, but looking at it from space, I realize it's so small. We're just floating in the dark." And to bring it back to Final Fantasy VI, I feel like since Final Fantasy VI, its success and its legacy has influenced the future Final Fantasy games in a very particular way. Like, we really started to see more characters, more stories about, like, people struggling with life and death in very human and relatable ways. And, you know, playing this for the first time and then revisiting it a couple of times later over the years, it's really had a particularly profound effect and influence on me and has left a very strong impression on me where, frankly, most of the other Final Fantasy games haven't. Let me see, what else can I add? I'll also just add that one thing I really appreciate about the game is not only how narratively ambitious it is, but the depth of its mechanics. Just all the options you have available between characters and how you can customize them and give them interesting abilities, and like the depth and variety of the enemy behavior patterns is something that I think is really interesting. And like each character has like a specific unique ability according to like their class. Like say for example, Sabin is a monk, so he has like these special like monk abilities where I think they're called blitzes. Yeah, they're called blitzes, where you basically kind of input like a fighting game-esque combo and just basically just executes a move. And he has a lot of really powerful physical and magical attacks. And there's and basically every character has like a unique sort of ability as a part of their class, and it adds a lot of like depth and variety to combat. And then there's a Magicite, which gets introduced towards the like end of the first act, I guess, or like towards the I don't know halfway point of the first part. It's kind of hard describing this in terms of acts, but basically, like Magicite allows your characters to learn magic, which further allows you to gain powerful techniques and interesting buffs and debuffs, and like can further like diversify how your character's playing. I'll also say that I really like that this game kind of forces its players to use basically every character at various critical moments in the game. So I really like that they forced you to really be thoughtful and creative, and you can't like get away with just like having one party as your main party and just grinding with them for the entire game and like never leveling up your other characters because you will not finish the game that way.
Yeah, no, that's usually how I play, 'cause I figure having max levels is important and shuffling is tedious, takes time.
I mean, I don't mind shuffling stuff because I always shuffle. Like, even if the game doesn't really require me to do so, I always like, because I want to know more about every character and do different things with them because I value depth and variety in my combat. Like, if I'm just playing with the same party over and over again, it just gets monotonous. And so I really like the fact that everyone has unique mechanics about them. And I like making weird combinations and playing around with, items known as relics, which can give you specific reactions or special abilities as well to give you more customization for those characters. So that's kind of how I prefer to play it. Like, I don't really like having just one party. I like mixing them up and constantly shuffling and substituting people. Though grinding can definitely be tedious, and I do not like grinding. Like, that's kind of
Yeah, like I
unfortunate,
think
but,
if like the mission, like the enemies that you have to face as you're progressing forward stayed at like a consistent, like a lower level, so you didn't feel like you have to use your most powerful people, that would make it easier to, actually take the time to rotate people out so that you're not
yeah.
like usually by the time I get to one of those battles, it's like, okay, so I need this other person, but their level is so low that they're just gonna get killed, so I might as well just try to brute force it with my most powerful people.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, I'm playing Final Fantasy VI on emulator, so I have like certain ways I can kind of cheese the game so that way I don't have to spend hours grinding. Like, I have basically this cheat program called Art Money, and so basically I can look up any value within the game that I want. So I can go to like the character stats and be like, this is how many total experience points they have. I can find that number and then like
Just add 10
put
zeros
another
to it.
zero at the end. Yeah. And so then I automatically level them up. I try to be reasonable and not like make them too overpowered because I still want the game to be challenging. But I ran into a point where I got to the floating continent, which is like a big moment right at the end of the first half of the game, where there was a huge difficulty spike, where like my characters were in like the low to mid 20s and I was doing really fine. And then as soon as I got to the continent, like there was a huge difficulty spike, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna have to grind now in order to like get out of this situation because there's just no way I can survive where I am now. So I ended up using the cheat thing to just quickly level up my characters in like one battle, but not like too high to like make it completely like steamroll them. Just make it reasonable enough so that it's like beatable at least.
Yeah, it's too bad that they don't make that like an actual mechanic so you can have an in-game training montage. You just like you cut to like a cutscene, your characters are all working out, and now you gain 5 levels.
It'll be interesting. But,
I kind of miss how, you know, like, older game, like, yeah, you can use emulators for newer games, but, like, a lot of older games, they would have, you know, passwords and cheats just built into the game because they know you don't want to actually go, or, like, they'll give you the option, you know, if you don't want to have to get through all these levels, you can just skip to the last one and see what the end of the game is like.
Yeah, I mean, that made more sense for, like, older stuff because, like, I mean, a lot of those weren't RPGs. Those were just straight-up, like, platformers or, like, action-adventure
kind of things. Yeah, and a lot of times they would be, like, experience points. Like an arcade port where the arcade is trying to, like, milk your money out of you by making you die a lot, and then they just sneak some passwords in there for the console version in case you don't want to die, since you've already paid all your money in anyway.
And not only that, but also, like, I don't think they really introduced, like, memory cards and, like, actually being able to save your files until, like, SNES, maybe?
Yeah, there were, like, one or two NES games that had battery-backed save files, but it was mostly, like, SNES Genesis era that started doing that.
Yeah, so you didn't have, like, batteries or proper, like, memory cards, so, like, a lot of times you could play a game and, you know, do fine, but then it's like you die and then, well, now you lose all your progress and the next time you launch your console, well, now you're back at square one.
Yeah, but so I still remember, like, infinite lives and infinite health being cheats up through, like, N64 and, like, some third-party GameCube games. I think, like the Spider-Man movie game had that. You could just, like, enter a code and now you've got infinite health and you can fly on the Goblin's glider. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it seems like they used to have a lot of fun cheats that they snuck in games, and then gaming got serious, and now they don't offer that.
I don't know if gaming got serious. I think it's less necessary now because you have save files, memory cards. Games have difficulty sliders too, so if something's too hard, you can just make it easier.
Yeah, I suppose.
Anyway, just to wrap up my. Talk on Final Fantasy VI. Where was I? I would just add that, like, one thing I thought was really cool about Final Fantasy VI, and then I'll kind of wrap up here, was the game just crammed a lot of interesting details and, like, lots of Easter eggs and secrets in it, and there were also, like, a lot of, like, weird, funny glitches that you can kind of mess around with that make it fun to constantly visit and try to discover them all.
Yeah. Actually, with the difficulty thing, the next question from Toshiro is, any video games either of you dropped after playing / tried playing once?
Yeah, plenty of games. I mean, most of them I can't really remember specifically off the top of my head, mostly just stuff that just wasn't very interesting. Like, I tried playing the original Kingdom Hearts recently, and I got, like, a couple hours in, and I just really hated the bad platforming that game had. And I was just not really taken or interested in the story. I never really got the appeal of Kingdom Hearts, just because I'm not a big Disney guy. And when I first played, I kind of played Kingdom Hearts in a weird order, because I played Kingdom Hearts 2 first and actually kind of enjoyed it, because I thought the combat was kind of fun and a bit of a neat change of pace. But before that, no, Kingdom Hearts, yeah, sorry. I had not played any Final Fantasy games before playing Kingdom Hearts 2. I kind of vaguely knew who, like, Cloud was, or Sephiroth, because they're so iconic and memorable. But, like, I didn't really know who Squall was, who for some reason his name was changed to Leon. I don't know why. But, or Sophie, or, like, I didn't have a lot of context for a lot of that stuff. So, like, the Final Fantasy stuff didn't make any sense to me. And then the Disney characters, like, I was just never... I grew up watching a lot of Disney movies, but never actually felt very strongly about Disney movies. And outside of maybe The Lion King, I don't think any of them ever made me feel, like, any sort of enthusiasm or passion for them. I was mostly just very kind of meh and not plussed about them. And still remain today, honestly. So the idea of, like, a Final Fantasy Disney crossover just never really seemed interesting to me. Like, everyone's just like, oh, it's Mickey Mouse, but he's, like, badass, and he has, like, a keyblade and stuff, and it just seemed very bizarre to me. But, to get back to answer the original question, Kingdom Hearts, I quit on pretty early because the story's just convoluted and nonsensical. And, it was also hard to go back to play Kingdom Hearts 1 after already playing Kingdom Hearts 2. That was more refined and polished mechanically and didn't have the bad platforming, because they wisely got rid of that part of the game.
Okay, so it's not that Kingdom Hearts is really bad as a series, just that the first one didn't have the feedback that they'd gotten for 2.
I guess, I mean, I don't love Kingdom Hearts 2. It was, like, mildly amusing, and I enjoyed it well enough to play through, like, the main story stuff.
Mm.
But not interested enough to really revisit it again or really do any of, like, the side quest optional stuff or any of the optional super bosses that are in the game.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, because I'm sure there probably are a lot of games that I've played and forgotten because they just weren't worth the time. I guess, yeah, the first one comes to mind. I did play it more than once, but Splatoon. I think the first time I played, like, I didn't want to do... I'm not a multiplayer gamer, generally. I don't like competitive gaming. I prefer single player playing at my own pace. So I started playing the single player. It was okay. I mean, with Wii U games, I'm generally not fond of the ones that won't let you play on the tablet screen. They make you have to do, like, one screen is the TV and another screen is the tablet. I like to just play on the tablet, which is one of the nice things about Switch, because that one, they don't do that asymmetric gameplay. Everything is either you can play it on the TV or you can play it on the tablet, and so that's nice. But no, Splatoon... Because of the way the game is designed, you have to play it on the TV. You're using your tablet as, like, a motion controller. And the single player was fine. Like, it wasn't really interesting. It was okay. Eventually, I gave the multiplayer a shot. I was having fun with it, actually. It was, you know, I could see why people like it. It's, like, just, like, a fun paint shooter where it's, like you are shooting people, but... You can also not do that. You can just, like, go run off somewhere else and try to cover as much area in paint, and that's what will actually get you the win, is covering things in paint and not your kill-death ratio. But, yeah, so I was enjoying it. I decided to, after I got up to, like, level 5, or rank 5 or whatever, dropped out so I could go check out the weapon shop, go upgrade some stuff, and when I went back in, it dropped me into a game with all... like level 49 and 50 players, and I was level 5, and so my gear was just so underpowered that I couldn't do anything, and it was so frustrating that I just quit the game after that. Like, I stuck through the match because they penalize you for dropping out, but they stuck me into such an unbalanced match that I had no chance of, like, I was just gonna get shot, like, everywhere I go. So I just stood there at the home base and waited for the match to end, and then I just have not played that game since.
I mean, that's unfortunate. That seems weird that that would put in such a weird, unbalanced fight like that.
Yeah.
I would assume matchmaking is usually designed to avoid that.
Yeah, and I you know, every time I've mentioned it to someone, they said, yeah, it doesn't usually do that. So I don't know why it did it that time, if that was just, like, the only game available, but... Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to look at my games to see if there's any others. I know... Dragon Age Inquisition, I wanted to get into it, but the gameplay itself wasn't that great, so I don't think I played it more than one or two times before I dropped off and eventually sold it because I realized I hadn't played it in months.
Yeah, Inquisition, I really wanted to like that game because I loved the story and the characters, and I was already into the first two games, so I was very invested in it.
Mm.
And I played, like, I invested a lot of time in it, but eventually I just got frustrated by how boring the combat is. Mm. That's the big problem with Dragon Age games, is they don't really have very interesting combat, but I kind of cheesed my way through the first two games, because there are, like, save file editors and other mods I could use to make the game like a breeze, and I could just cheese through it and not care.
Like, combat and gameplay-wise, do the others play more like other Bio... Because, you know, I enjoy the other BioWare games, like Knights of the Old Republic or Jade Empire or Mass Effect, like, where... It feel like you can kind of do the combat, but it's not involved enough that you really have to care about it. You can just, like, run around and talk to people, and sometimes have to hit a button to do some attacks.
Not really. The Dragon Age Origins was kind of like that, because it was kind of like you press a button and then you target an enemy and then you go hit them. So that was pretty basic enough.
Mm.
So that wasn't too bad, but. You still had to be at least kind of active to some degree. Dragon Age 2, definitely not. You have to very much be like very active and involved. They tried to make it more like action.
Let's see. Yeah, no, I'm looking at my... Because I think most of the games, if I played them and then didn't like them, I either sold them or... I don't know, they're just... They're not really around anymore. The Legend of Korra game on 3DS wasn't very good.
I heard it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it's like what a stripped-down version of a Fire Emblem game.
Yeah, that seems weird that you go with that instead of like an actual like action.
Yeah, like if they did like an action platformer Metroidvania kind of thing, like that could be fun. Just having like Korra running around shooting water whips and fire kicks and stuff. But no, they went with like Fire Emblem top down map where you like you walk along the grid and position yourself near an enemy and then you target them for an attack.
Yeah, which seems weird, because I think it was made by the same people who did the, Bayonetta and stuff, so I was expecting it to be more in that vein, which, like, I'm not a super big Bayonetta fan, but I would rather have, like, a cool action game, where it's just all about, like, kinesthetic and, like, just really active and, like you really feel like, the impact of every hit and every punch, and you're just, like, blowing through trash mob stuff, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, a Legend of Korra Bayonetta-style action game would be really cool. If it's just, like, combos that do, like, your elemental attacks, and you're just, like, plowing through armies of enemies.
Yeah, that would be way more interesting than a weird, like, Fire Emblem strategy game. It's just...
Yeah.
It just seems like such an odd choice.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, his next question. Would you be willing to discuss your prior / current pets if it's not too personal or difficult?
Sure, I guess. And there's not much, too much to say that's terribly interesting. Oh. For me, my first pet was Bruno. He was a German Shepherd Labrador Retriever mix. We had him for maybe a year, a little under that. He was cute, but unfortunately, due to the circumstances that my mom and I were living in at the time, it was too difficult to really raise him. There were just a lot of weird issues, where I went to school and the where she worked was like really far away, and it was a really long commute, so we weren't even home all that often anyway. So we didn't really have an opportunity to really actually spend time with the dog and take care of it. So it just wasn't really a great situation. So that, unfortunately, did not work out, and we gave him away to, my mom's, former, ex-boyfriend or whatever, and I think he moved away to, Santo Domingo or something with the dog, I guess. So, and then, let me see, after that, I had one cat named Silo, but that was with when my mom had gotten remarried to this guy, but then it didn't work out, so they divorced, and he kept the cat, and then... Shortly after that, we got adopted a cat of our own named Marshall, who we had for about a year. But then my mom met another guy who she's now currently married to, and he's allergic to cats. So we ended up having to give him away to a neighbor of ours in the neighborhood we currently live in now. And then we got a dog, a Labradoodle, named Daisy, who we rescued from this old lady who I think her husband had recently passed away, and so she couldn't really take care of it on her own. So we kind of adopted her and had her for about a year or two, and then she mysteriously passed away. I was away at college at the time, so I don't really know what happened, but apparently she had this super rare disease that only affects specific breeds of dogs. Was it Addison's or Atkinson's disease or something like that?
Okay.
And it just happened suddenly out of nowhere.
Mm.
And so it was very just bizarre and shocking. And it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm.
And then after Daisy unfortunately passed away, lived for probably went another couple of years. And then we got Maddie, who was also a Labradoodle. Yeah, and so she still lives with us. Actually, she's in the room with her. Then, a couple of weeks ago, we just adopted our second dog, Ellie, who I guess is from the Bahamas. But I guess their original owner was getting sick and couldn't take care of her anymore.
Wow, that's a long way for a dog to travel for new owner.
Yeah.
So I've had a fish tank in my room since 2015, I think. It was like September 2015. The first few fish in there, I made the mistake of naming them, and then they died within like a week or a month, depending. Like, pet shop fish are usually so close to the end of their lives that they don't last, plus the tank hadn't actually been cycled yet, because I didn't know how that worked. But eventually, after a few months of going through pet shop fish, I got a female one who had three babies who lasted 2 years. The last one of those just died off last month, but when I was down to one, I figured, okay, I'll go to the pet shop. I bought more fish. I've got two females and a male. The new male died, and then the old male who I had, he was an orange guppy, he died. And then one of the females just died, but I've got one left, and she has had three babies and just had a fourth one. Like, I was just looking in the tank the other day, and suddenly there's a new tiny fish, and they seem to be growing pretty fast. Like, it's been a while, so I don't remember how fast the old ones grew, but these ones, like, they've gone from being little specks to now pretty visible. So yeah, I've got a new generation of fish growing in there. I discovered I can't, you know, guppies, I think it's like 50 cents or 75 cents for a fancy guppy, which is like a guppy with like, it's been bred for fancy colors. Since, you know, I've come not to expect much from pet shop fish for like lifespan, I went with, I can't remember what they called them. Feeder guppy, which is like just kind of a yellowish, tannish looking, like it's not a fancy color guppy. It's just like a natural guppy. So I got, those are what the new ones are. So, like, they're not interesting colors, but yeah, it's just kind of nice, you know, to be able to, like, just see this little fish swimming around in there and doing fish stuff. I just feed it once a day and keep the water clean and, like, the tank clean, and that's all I have to do for them. Yeah, and I haven't named any of them, and they seem to last better when I don't name them. So, they're just, like, identify them by their gender and their color. And since they're all the same color, you know, it's like, okay, one of those is probably male number one, and one of those is female number one, and I guess, I don't know. Anyway, Toshiro has one question left. Any musical artists you recently came across that you enjoy?
That was the music question? Yep. Okay, I targeted this one specifically because I'm a big music guy and I have lots of new music. So just to go by it real quick, my favorite band of all time, Protest a Hero, made a new EP, or LP, I think, called Pacific Myth. That was pretty good. I really liked that a lot. Recently, I was watching a Gang Grumps episode, and Aaron started singing lyrics to the song, and I Googled it, and I actually really liked the song, so I ended up finding the website and just downloading the whole album. It's called Feel the Music by Dayton, and the song itself is called The Sound of Music by Dayton. I don't know if you ever saw that episode. There was, like, I don't remember which episode of Gang Grumps it was, but I was watching it, and it was, like, singing the lyrics of the song for some reason, just as, like, a joke. And, like, I think it was, like, with Dan, and he's like, what are you singing? He's like, oh, I love this song. It's great. And apparently I'm not the only one, because the whole comment section of the video is just people going, I'm here because Game Grumps. So that was weird. But, yeah, the song is pretty cool. And the album as a whole is, like, a cool early 80s kind of disco R&B sort of beat. So it's kind of fun. Also, Pacific Myth, I forgot to mention, Protest Zero is a progressive metal band, in case anyone was curious about that. But there's a guy who I recently discovered named Rashad EB. He has a YouTube channel under the same name. He does metal covers of video game music. And so I downloaded a bunch of, like, his covers. He's done a lot of cool stuff for, like, Chrono Trigger and, trying to think what else. He's done, like, covers of, like, anime openings, like One Punch Man's opening thing he did a cover of. So, like, an English cover, so they got, like, he partnered up with, like,
I know, I've heard an English cover. I don't know if it's that one. Who was it again?
There's a couple different ones.
Yeah.
A couple of different people have done it, but I know he got one with Caleb Hayes, I think his name is, who does lots of English covers.
Okay.
So they paired up together, and they did, like, a cover of it on their own, which was pretty funny.
Hmm.
And, there's a bunch of other stuff. He's done, like, a lot of Pokemon covers, too.
Hmm.
That was the thing that I think I first discovered him by, is he did a bunch of really cool covers of Pokemon music, and I really dig that. So, you know, anyone who's interested in video game music and looks cool covers should check out his stuff.
Hmm.
I also, shout out to Zen Psychosis. I don't think he'll be listening to this, but he introduced me to a band called Candlemass a while ago, and he showed me the song Bewitched, which is a great song.
Mm.
And I got really curious, so I started looking at more Candlemass stuff, and I looked up another album by Candlemass called Epicus, Dumicus, Metallicus, and I ended up really falling in love with it, and ended up finding a place to download it. So I went up and downloaded that, and I'm going to probably download Bewitched and the album that it's from at some point. I think it's called Nightfall.
Mm.
And so they're like a doom metal band, in case anyone's interested. And then also Queen. Queen's not exactly new, but you know, I recently downloaded the song Don't Stop Me Now, because Don't Stop Me Now is probably my current favorite Queen song. Now, let's see, there was another one, it was Genesis by Justice. Justice is like this electronic band. I knew one of their songs because it showed up on like a soundtrack to a sports game that I really liked. And then just out of random, I saw one of the other songs from that album called Genesis, and ended up downloading it because I like that one as well. I also downloaded a bunch of songs from former gangsta rapper from like late 90s, early 2000s, and DMX, like Party Up and Rough Riders Anthem, and a couple of other ones. Says a lot about me that like the most recent rap song I bought was from DMX, who hasn't really been relevant in like over a decade. I should tell you a lot about my taste in rap. And then also, shout out to Sketch. He, I think in like the Dice Funk box, just out of nowhere, just like linked to a song by a Japanese jazz band called Cassiopeia. And I really like the song, so I bought the whole album and I really dig it.
Mm.
And there was another one was Beware the Circling Fin by Early Man. So they, I guess a while ago, posted like an LP, it's just like 4 or 5 songs. But that was pretty cool, and then I also bought another one of their albums, because one of its songs was featured in another sports game that I also really like. I'm trying to think what the name of the song was. It was Feeding Frenzy, that's what it was. Feeding Frenzy, I don't remember what the name of the album was, but the song was Feeding Frenzy. So I dug that. I also, a while ago, discovered Era. I'm not super familiar with their works, but I am curious. I listened to Drift, which is the name of the album. I specifically discovered them because I follow a bunch of record labels that publish metal music, and one of them released a song, like a music video for one of Era's songs, and I really liked the music video. So the song was called Skyline, so it's pretty cool. And then, the next one. This is something I discovered by falling down a weird Google hole. Because there's an old Let's Player that I used to follow named Lucagen, and she had a series with another Let's Player named Tekken Toucans where they played Sonic Adventure 2 together. And one of the jokes in one of like, the later episodes was Tekken Toucans made a reference to this song, and I was like, this song sounds familiar, but where is it from? And eventually I finally figured out what it was. It's Love Addict by Family Force 5. And I ended up watching the music video for it, and thought it was pretty funny and entertaining, so I ended up buying the music. And then, last but not least, would be, there's a webcomic artist that I really like. His name is Jeff Jacks. He draws a webcomic named Questionable Content, which is really good, and I strongly recommend reading it. It's a very good series. And he has, like, this weird, like, side project he does where he makes music. He originally did it under the name Death Mole, which is actually a fictitious band in his webcomic. So he kind of made Death Mole, like, real, basically. And so he started releasing, like, instrumental metal tracks under that label. And then recently, he decided to get away from Death Mole because I guess he just got bored with the old label. So he decided to start a new label that also does instrumental metal and called it Stelliferous, and he released an album called North. And I remember when he first announced that, I listened to the first track and instantly fell in love with it and was just immediately just blown away and really impressed by the music and had a great time. And so I bought it instantly.
Hmm.
And then his most recent thing was a weird sort of electronic album that he released under the label of Hakase. And I think that's about it for the most part.
Hmm. Yeah, so I looked up which One Punch Man one I have. It said Tsuko G. I don't know if that's the original artist or the one singing the English version.
Don't think that's the Tsuko G.
Yeah.
No, I think that's the, okay, so that's the guy who's doing the cover, okay?
Yeah.
Although I'm not as familiar with his stuff, I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, I think I was just looking for One Punch Man on iTunes or something, and then I came across that one. I guess, music... I don't think there's any new artists I've come across, but I went through a bunch of the stuff that I was listening to in college that I hadn't... When I switched computers, I didn't add it back into the iTunes. I just had it, like, there on the hard drive. So I started adding some of those back. Most of them are video game songs, but one of them, Susumu Hirasawa, who is a composer who worked with Satoshi Kon on a lot... Like, he did the music for Paprika... Paranoia Agent, and then he had his own website that I discovered, and it had, like, a bunch of, like, free sample songs, so I got a bunch of his stuff on there, and it all has that kind of surreal, kind of trippy sound to it that's also, like, really catchy.
Interesting.
So, I added all of his stuff back to my, I guess it's a phone that I use as an MP3 player.
Yeah, so do I. I think most people just use their phones as MP3 players right now.
Yeah, like I have my main phone, but then I have another phone that is just for like MP3s and podcasts. So, like that one, the only apps that get used on there are Google Play and iSyncer, which is like an Android app that lets me hook up to my iTunes and just automatically download anything that I've downloaded on there.
Neat. Speaking of Japanese composers, I'm just going to give a shout out to Sunao Ibahori, who did the soundtrack for Trigun. It's very good.
Mm.
And he hasn't done a lot of work since then. And he doesn't have a lot of anime credits, which makes me sad because his stuff is very trippy and weird and experimental. But I really liked what he did with Trigun. And I think he worked a little bit on some of the stuff with Cowboy Bebop.
Same here.
I know he was. Because he was a part of like a group of anime composers who all formed like this one band called the Seatbelts, and I know they did the opening theme for Cowboy Bebop and a lot of music on it. I think they did some like other collaborative works for other anime as well. If I'm not mistaken.
Also, I remembered. With video game stuff, I did get another new game recently, Bridge Constructor Portal, which is like a pseudo-sequel to Portal 2. It's not real, it has nothing to do continuity-wise with Portal 2, but it has, GLaDOS is back and is walking you who, like, you are a stick figure in this factory, and you're supposed to build, like, they'll give you, like, a flat map, and, like, some points that you can connect your bridge to, but you have to, like, build all the struts and cables and stuff to make it support the trucks that will have to go across it. And sometimes you'll have to, like, get a truck to go across it and through a portal and across a button, which will drop a cube onto another button, and that will open up the door, and then the truck has to reach that door. So, I mean, it's like a neat puzzle game with some physics in there. And your score is based on how much material you use to make the bridge. So if you want to go for the high score, you have to try to build it with as few, like, struts and stuff as possible. So that one, I mean, it's kind of neat. I'll get back to it at some point. I also bought the game Squidlet. I don't use my computer for games, and I'm going to have to reinstall Steam if I ever want to play it, but It's like a cute Game Boy. Like, it's in that kind of green monochrome that like classic Game Boy was, and it's designed to like look and feel like a classic Game Boy game. And you're playing as an octopus that it can like hop around, and if you want to attack things, you have to like jump up and shoot ink down on them. Jim Sterling did a video which Anna McKean, who's a fan of Funk Dunk Plays, she shared it with me, and then I saw it, and then I went and bought the game, and now I'm debating if I want to reinstall Steam just so I can play it. Because I try not to install too many programs on my computer if I can help it. But yeah, I guess we're up to an hour and a half, and we can wrap up now if you want, unless there's other topics.
We think. I think most of the stuff, I think. I don't know if you had any thoughts about Toys R Us going out of business.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, I don't really like going anywhere in the afternoon, so if I was going to go there, it would have been this morning, but I had considered going there today because I heard their liquidation sale started today. But at the same time, like, there's nothing in particular I want to get there. I mean, it seems like usually I go there not really looking for anything specifically, and then I end up finding something, so I know if I went there, I would find something, but I'm most likely I would find something, but at the same time, that's how I end up in the situation where I am now, where I'm surrounded by toys that I like, but there's just too damn many of them now.
Yeah, I'm just really sad that Toys R Us is going. I don't know when the last time I've even been in Toys R Us was. I was definitely before I was even a teenager, honestly. Mm. But it's just sad, just because like I'm worried because for one, like Toys R Us kind of had like a monopoly in the industry, and now that they're gone, it's like.
Like Walmart, I guess, is the biggest seller of toys, but Toys R Us is like the last big, like nationwide retailer dedicated exclusively to toys. Like there'll be like local stores.
Walmart doesn't really have much of a toy selection. It's really really small.
Yeah, no, yeah. And Toys R Us is where you go if you want to. Like losing Toys R Us is definitely going to hurt like anything that's not like the big mainstream toy lines. Like all the smaller products are either gonna have to try to squeeze their way into like Walmart and Target, or they're going to have to get a bigger presence on like Amazon, or I mean there's other websites like Entertainment Earth has a good selection of that kind of obscure stuff, but their prices are usually so high that I don't like to shop there.
Yeah, and part of the problem is also just the fact that like Walmart, places like Walmart and Amazon specifically, like, have really low prices, but that they're not, they're basically a loss leader. They're not actually trying to make a profit. They're just trying to deliberately undercut Toys R Us and other, like, dedicated toy places.
Yeah.
So that way when they drive them out of business, then they can, you know, now they have the only spot and you can only go to them. And then they can drive the prices to ridiculous heights. And I guarantee you, that's probably what's going to start happening with Amazon now, is those prices are going to get very expensive now.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know, since I follow LEGO blogs, they've said that the LEGO company doesn't want Toys R Us, when they're liquidating their products, to put any of the LEGOs on sale. They want them to just box them up and send them back to LEGO. So, I don't know what that means for that, but yeah, LEGO, I guess, is confident enough in their product's ability to sell through other means that they don't feel like they need, you know, Toys R Us to try to compensate them.
I mean, I don't even know, would it even matter at this point? If Toys R Us already has the toys, then they've already paid the money to LEGOs to have the toys to be able to sell them in the first place.
So I don't know if I'm not sure how that works, because I know, like, some products have, like, a vendor setup where like, they won't even stock them themselves. They'll have, like, someone from an outside company come and stock them. I think LEGO might be one of those. They, like, they handle their own stocking on stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that stuff works. I would have just assumed that, like, Toys R Us already has this stuff stocked, and, like, they've already paid the original company for that stuff. So I don't really see why it matters to them whether or not they're going on sale or not, or I don't know exactly how that stuff works. It's probably something that I'm not understanding.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, when they talked about, like, Toys R Us, you know, the first wave of ones that were closing were, like, the only one near here that was actually going to close in that first wave was a Babies R Us, and I don't care, whatever. But, yeah, no, you know, that they've apparently couldn't come to any deal that would save the rest of their stores. Yeah, it sucks that they're losing all of those other stores now.
Yeah, it's, I just kind of worry about other industries that might be affected by that, too. Because, like, I know, like, Western cartoons make so much of their money with their toys and this other stuff that they sell as a part of their show and their marketing. And I wonder how that's going to affect them now.
Yeah, I don't know if, because, I mean, so much of, yeah, the kind of nerdy stuff, it makes its money out of merchandising that, it feels like they're going to have to find another outlet for that, and might be something online, might be expanded selection through other retailers, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't imagine all the companies that make their money off of merchandising are just going to roll over and accept it if one of their biggest outlets is gone.
Well, of course not. They're going to try to find something, but it's only a matter of time before we find out if that something works, though. Mm. Yeah, that was just my thought that came to mind. It just seems so sad because it seems so unnecessary. Like, this didn't need to happen this way. Mm. Like, because, like, the main... I don't know how much you read up on it, but, like, the main reason why they went out of business is because they got basically bought out by equity firms and got saddled with, like, a lot of debt. They were already in a significant amount of debt, but it was something that would have been reasonably manageable on their own. But they got settled even more debt out because of the equity buyout, and basically the equity firms that bought them out just kind of run them in the ground, and like did so deliberately because it's more profitable for them to do it that way than to actually sustain the business and make it competitive and whatnot. So it's like really gross, and it's weird that this is like a legal thing that you can do.
Yeah, no, I hadn't actually read up on what caused them to shut down. Yeah, I don't know. We should probably end this on a happy note of some sort.
Oh, I got a call from a place that I applied to. And I might have an interview.
For a big fancy job.
Hopefully. God.
Okay, yeah, actually, I just remembered. I'll post it on the thread, but next week we may have a different person hosting the show. Actually,
different person?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm debating whether I should try to keep this acting like it's a real thing. Or next week is April Fool's. I have my Funk Dunk Plays character hopefully coming in to be the guest host. It sounds like Sean is also planning to be there as another character to talk to the character. So yeah, we will definitely need questions for next week because we've had like one downtime scene in Funk Dunk Plays and Elisa had like nothing to say because she's not like a chatty person. She doesn't know how to relax and be comfortable. She's usually on edge. So we'll need questions to carry that episode. But it'll be fun.
Alrighty, then.
So, yeah. So, until next week, stay funky. Specifically, coming out of Warhammer, you so easily.